The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are ones that you'll actually want to hear about. But we need to learn a little bit more about you to make that possible. So go to podsurvey.com/Florio and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way, we can bring on advertisers you won't want to skip. Once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/Florio, F-L-O-R-I-O. Thanks for your help.
What is pre-crack
base
for life?
Because I think so. I don't know. I wasn't trying them on Monday. They were pretty good, so I hope that's true. I hope I'll be able to come and give me some more in the future.
Hey, that's an inducement. That's an incentive. People have asked me, why don't they do NIL at the NFL level? This is kind of like NIL for the NFL. Local restaurant in Baltimore offering free crab cakes for life for Derrick Henry.
Wow. Crab cakes for life, and he's never even touched the ball for the Ravens yet. What a deal. Damn. I mean, I'll take that too. Right. I mean, I hope he meets expectations and they don't take that deal back if he doesn't play well this year or something like that. That wouldn't be right. That wouldn't be fair.
But once you offer crab cakes for life,
that's a strong
you're
thing.
You're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
Your only option is to kill the guy.
I mean, you're really stuck. You are. I mean, I don't know if you had to go that dirty or that dark there, Dr. Doom.
I mean, but really, you've given the guy free crab cakes for life. You're committed to free crab cakes for as long as he lives.
Yeah.
So your only option is to hasten his demise.
Yeah. Or you're really hoping that he's a really good guy that won't take advantage of that offer very often. And it really won't matter that he comes in, once every 3 months and asks for 8 crab cakes. He's in our store. Everybody sees in our store. That's what he's betting on. He's not betting on it's going to be an everyday or 3 times a week type of, appearance into the restaurant.
Part of the dilemma of getting the free meal is figuring out the appropriate tip. And the proper etiquette would be what it would have cost and do a tip based on that plus something because you got the meal for free. So it would be the usual 20 to 25%. And look, at some point the default of 15 became 20, which is good. I fully support that.
Totally.
I think that if you get the meal free, you got to be thinking about 30% minimum
easily.
Of the value.
I honestly think sometimes when I've gotten free food, I've ended up paying more money than I did when I would have just paid for it and gave a tip, right? I was so nice and grateful, and here's something that was $35. They gave it to free, and I go, oh, here's $100, spread it around with everybody. Give everybody, what I mean? It actually, at least in my case and the way my dad raised me in certain scenarios, and my dad's his phrase growing up was don't tip, over tip. Right. Spread the wealth. He was always cool that way. And, that's kind of usually the approach I take with those where I walk out and go, damn, it would have been better if I just would have paid for it because I paid for it extra because they were nice and I appreciated the gesture so much that I wanted to make sure I, you know, you give back. And that's kind of where I've always been with those kind of things.
Now that we're down that path, you know, my own approach is I'm suspicious of certain charities because of the overhead expenses and how much money the people who run it are cramming into their pockets. And we've seen the studies about the charitable foundations out there.
Right.
What percentage actually ends up being used for the greater good.
Right.
So when you go to a local restaurant and you know that the person there is busting his or her ass
100%
to bring you food and it's a tough job and they got to deal with a lot of assholes, even when I'm not there.
Yeah.
Let's 20%, 25%, 30%. Give them 35. Give them a big tip. I tell my son that all the time. We got a Mexican restaurant we love to go to. Anytime he goes, make sure you give him a good tip. Give him a good tip. Give him a good tip. Because it is a tough job.
It is
a thankless job. And there are a lot of people
who
either stiff them because they're like, the price is the price. I'm not going to tip.
Yeah,
the price
is
the price. What's all this tipping thing? Well, that's called living in a civilized society. And that's how it works. And the people who are bringing you the food and refilling your Pepsi and getting you another margarita or another beer or whatever, they're getting paid peanuts in comparison to even the minimum wage because they make their money from their tips. That's just the way it works. Whatever the price is on the menu, assume another 20% or more because that's what you're going to be paying for the meal because you got to take care of the person who takes care of you.
Yeah.
And also, they handle your food. If it's a place you're going to go to on a regular basis, why would it's self-preservation.
Right.
Why wouldn't you overtip? Good Lord.
I
overtip when we get takeout for crying out loud.
Yeah.
These are the people who handle my food. You can either be nice to them or you can suffer the consequences.
No, I agree with everything you say there. I do. We've both been fortunate to have great lives and have money. And, you know, and it's not all because we're smart or whatever else. It's definitely not that, right? We've had a little luck with some good hard work, right? And things like that, right? I mean, but you know what I'm trying to get at there, right? So we've had luck, you know, shine down on us to a degree. I believe in trying to spread the wealth, you know, to people who have not been as lucky or less fortunate or whatever ever there. And you're right. I mean, they're doing jobs that I know a lot of the times I don't want to do, right? I do appreciate their work. They're usually being underpaid. They are handling food for me and loved ones. That's important to me, right? And like you said, it's a local establishment that you're going to all the time. I never understand, you know, cheaping out on that type of thing. You know, one of the places I go to a lot, right? I always have friends that go with me and they're like, wow, they love you here. Wow, you don't even have to call to get a reservation, huh? You just get in. And they're like, how'd you do that? And it's really just because I tip well. That's it. And they all know me and like me because they know, damn, if Chris gets a bill for $100, he might leave a $100 tip. But, you know, one, I'm glad to do that. And two, it ends up actually benefiting me. Oh, wait, damn, I don't have a reservation on a Friday night. And it's, you know, 7:15. I call this place. Oh, hey, Mr. Sims, right? You know, and I mean, I don't know. Those are benefits that of being nice. And it comes back around, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So treat people well.
So
the point.
You're a strategic tipper, basically.
It is not a gratuity.
It totally is.
It works into that.
There's a calculation.
Totally. It works into that because there's places that I don't
disagree with you.
Well, yeah, and there's lots of places that I don't go back again or just a one-time thing, and I still leave a very generous tip. So, no, it is a generosity thing. But my point is that when you do that, especially at places like you're talking about, it comes back usually to, you know, help you out in a lot of ways anyways. And that was all I was trying to say.
Old matter from football season. Yeah. I have begun leaving a note when I leave the tip in the hotel room now, especially if it's a multi-day stay. So they don't think it's some test to see if they're trying to steal 20 or 40 bucks from me. And even if I'm just staying in a place one night, we were in Columbus a couple of weeks ago, we spent the night. It's like, yeah, I mean, these people are the ones who always get overlooked, the people who have to clean up the disgusting messes that end up in hotel rooms. I mean, people treat rental cars badly. They treat hotel rooms 50 times worse than a rental car because it ain't their place. And it's a crap hole when you walk out the door. Now, I'll try to clean up a little bit. I feel bad for these people because it's another thankless job.
Yeah, of course.
And you don't. you rarely have that same interaction that you would have with someone if you're at a restaurant. So people, be generous with your tipping, because there are difficult jobs out there. And, you know, it brightens someone's day, I think, to get a good tip.
Sure.
And frankly, I've evolved over time because it helps to have money. But my wife, I mean, my wife's like Robert De Niro in Goodfellas. I mean, she's handing out money everywhere she goes. She tips people when she shouldn't tip them.
I like it. That's like the way she do it. Yeah, you know, you can't die with it. You gotta give it away a little bit. Get it out there. Spread the wealth. So she's like, she's walking around with a big wad of cash in her pants all the time, basically, right?
She's always got cash.
That's awesome. Are you not a cash carrier?
I shouldn't say that. She never has cash. I like to have cash, even though I rarely actually use it when it's not football season.
Yeah.
I always have cash when I'm traveling because, you know, you want to leave a tip here, you want to leave a tip there, leave a tip here, and, you know, you can't.
Yeah, cash is
there's
king
no
in
interaction
that.
Right. Where you can give your
right.
card.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
when I typically carry cash, but no, she's always taking out cash. From the bank account.
Good.
And
get them, Jill.
Because she doesn't go to the grocery store anymore.
Yeah.
She doesn't go to the grocery store anymore. She does the online order, which there's a certain amount of Russian roulette that you play when you do an online order from a grocery store, because you're not going to get.
Yeah, you don't
what
get
you
everything.
You were going to get.
Right. Exactly.
You're not going to get it.
Right.
You just have to accept that. There's going to be a percentage of the stuff that you wanted that you're not going to get. And they're going to claim that they were out of stock. And if you go up there, they're not out of stock. The person just didn't feel like picking up that box. They picked up the other one. They clamor to bring out her order.
Yeah.
They fight with each other to bring out her order.
Right.
Because she's sitting there waving that cash around, waiting for him to put the groceries in the trunk. So anyway, I thought that you should tip. And I think it would be awkward. And there's a point where I feel like you're coming off as a jerk by, you know,
yeah, just throwing it out there.
Money.
I know, like, I'm Johnny big time. Yeah, I hear you. I hear
like,
you.
Like Warren Sapp throwing the 20 on the ground.
Yeah, right.
Is that something that he disagrees with? I don't want to get you in trouble with him again.
No,
throwing the 20 on the ground.
We're good. We're
Here's
good.
A 20. Here it is. Here, come get it. Here, you want it? You want it? You want it? Come get it.
Yeah.
But I feel like the people who bag your groceries should get a tip. I just don't know how to do it. Every time I go, it's like. Because I actively participate in the bagging of the groceries. I just want to get it done so the next person can go and I want to get home. And I feel weird. I'm just standing there while you're bagging my stuff.
It's yeah.
like I have arms that work. My hands still
yeah.
work. I'm
use those hands, use
too.
Those arms, get cash and give that guy the cash. That's what you should do.
Now, I would get fired if I actually were employed in that capacity, because I'm sure I'm doing it all wrong. Like, I'm dropping the jar of peanut butter on top of the eggs. I mean, it's not a pretty sight when I bag the groceries, but I feel like we should tip the people who bag groceries too. Maybe
I'm
we can
that.
Start that.
I'm
and it won't
that.
Be so awkward.
Right.
Because then do you give money to the like, okay, I'm going to give the guy bagging some, but what about the person who worked the cash register? And
I think that's on them to
the
figure that out. They got to figure it out and be like, hey, we're all a team here and whatever. That's what I would hope. That's kind of how I envision it, right? Yeah, you're right, because you can't start handing it out to everybody. You know, hey, here, this is for you guys, and you give it to one person, and hopefully they can figure that out.
Boy, we went from crab cakes to
well,
tip
hey,
etiquette.
Crab cakes. You like crab cakes? That's one like I found a taste for seafood later in life, right? I was never a big fan of it growing up, but as I got older, and really this is where the munchies came in play for me. And my wife will tell you they expanded my palate, right? To where she'd like try restaurants. I'd be like, okay, I'll try it. And I'd go, wow, that was pretty good. It was really most of the times because of the munchies, it did expand my palate, and I've become a seafood fan. But I don't really love crab. Crab is the one where I'm just like, eh, I don't know what it is. There's something about it that it just doesn't hit home with me there.
I like crab cakes if they're good. Does that make any sense? Like, there's a very wide variety of...
Right.
Like, sometimes the crab is so
crabby.
Chopped up, and there's other stuff in there that isn't really crab, and it's kind of crab-ish. And then you'll have the ones with, like, they fall apart because it's all this lump crab meat that they can't even hold it together. And so it just depends upon
has to be
it depends upon the
very
place.
Well
and I got to be in the mood. I got to be in the mood for a crab cake.
Yeah, I know.
I got to be – and they always give you two. Like, it's – like, why don't just make it bigger and make it one? I don't know if it's a presentation thing, but it's always two. And I like it. I like it if it's a little browned on the top and the bottom. I like it a little crispy on the top and the bottom. I like my food a little overcooked to have a little hard shell on. A little, just a little something crunchy, something to contrast with the texture.
Right.
So I didn't know you were a seafood guy.
I am a little bit.
I didn't know you like sushi. I thought you like bacalao. That's for Miles Simmons and for Matt Casey. Okay. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about when I say
none.
That?
No.
Okay.
None.
We'll leave it at that. Okay. We'll leave it at that and we'll move
right.
on.
All right.
We'll move on. Okay. So Derrick Henry free crab cakes for life, and we'll see if they renege on that. That reminded me of an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm recently where there was a question of all you can eat, and is there a limit to all you can eat?
Yeah,
is there
a
point where they can ask you to leave?
Right.
But it's all you can eat. And, like, is there some, like, four plates, is that it? Like, is there a point where it's permissible for them to say you've had enough? And that's kind of like, that was the first thing I thought of. Before I thought of their only way out of this is to kill Derrick Henry, the other way out of it is to say, you've had your lifetime supply of crab cakes. We're making that executive decision. You're done. That's another way out of it that wouldn't involve first-degree murder.
No, it wouldn't. It'd be a little awkward, but yeah, I guess that would be a way out of it. Excuse me there. Yes, it would be.
Apparently, there's a Simpson episode where Homer sues the seafood restaurant. I should know that, but I used to watch The Simpsons. Oh, there's Homer carrying the food. The great seafood-related Simpson episode involves when he ordered fugu, the poison blowfish, and he spent 24 hours thinking his heart was going to explode, and it was his final day, and he had a bucket list, a very, you know, hurried bucket list of all the things he wanted to do before his heart exploded, and then ultimately it didn't. Okay, 7 days of the draft. Boom. Do we have it? Boom. Let's go. There we go. 7 days. 7 days, baby. And, you know, before we get into the news of the day, I keep talking to more and more people. This quarterback thing is a puzzle that I don't think anyone really knows how to solve.
I agree.
And it's not like the teams are going to volunteer any information.
That's right.
And you have other teams that are hoping there's a run on quarterbacks because that puts them in a position.
Yeah.
To get guys they want.
Right.
Oh, please take quarterbacks. Yeah, they're right. Taking quarterbacks. Oh, yeah, because that's what happens.
I think that's added to the talk of the quarterbacks is the people wanting it to happen and encouraging it.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, they
the
could
original
go four off the
one
board. Right.
Is J.J. McCarthy.
Right.
Because Jim Harbaugh wants to create the impression he's helping his former quarterback while also helping himself because he wants four quarterbacks taken, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then at number 5, the Chargers have the de facto first overall pick in the draft because they take the guy they would have taken if they had the first overall pick in the draft because they weren't going to take a quarterback. They would have traded down and gotten more stuff, but never mind that. He just wants McCarthy to be taken, a cynic would say, because he wants to run the board at 5. And other teams are feeling that too. Yes, let's have 6 quarterbacks taken in the top 10. Absolutely. We're sitting here at number 15 waiting for the tackle we want or the edge rusher we want or the receiver we want. Yes, please draft all the quarterbacks, you idiots. Please. So I feel like that's a big part of this, and that makes it harder to discern who's going where and when.
Yeah, well, you know, I know you and I have been texting about this a little bit, right? This is something that I talked about on my podcast yesterday with Pete, right? Pete produces my podcast, does a great job there, where, you know, there is, hey, listen, could I see quarterback 1, 2, 3? Like, for sure, yes. But, you know, my point is that if New England trades down and the Giants don't take a quarterback, then it's like, what's going to happen? Where's it going to go from there? And then all of a sudden, these teams that we all talked about needed to trade up to get into the top 10 to get one of these quarterbacks are just going to be able to sit there, and they're going to fall to them. And do I think that's crazy? And do we practice a kind of a viewing the quarterback higher than it should be as a society in the draft talk conversation on a year-by-year basis? Yeah, we usually do, right? I mean, there's very few years where it shakes out the way we're kind of shaking it out, right? Where we had the Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance draft. But other than that, most years we go, oh, we think this is going to happen, and it kind of is a little less than that as far as the quarterback conversation goes. So I as we get closer here, I feel like we're getting closer to that, where all this talk of top 4 picks will be quarterbacks, and I don't know if I necessarily feel as strongly about that conversation or that feeling as I did maybe 2-3 weeks ago when I was hearing it.
Around any corner, within every battle, And with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The Premier League is built on hope. The hope of discovering a new star.
It doesn't take long for Darwin Nunez to make an impression.
The hope of rewriting history. And the hope of continuing a dynasty.
Unstoppable week after week.
This is the Premier League on NBC, USA, and Peacock.
We're going to take a deeper dive into this quarterback dynamic later. There was an interesting tweet yesterday from Jaden Daniels' agent, so we will discuss that later in the program. For now, you mentioned the New England Patriots, the man who coached the team for 24 seasons, available to be hired by anyone in the media and has been. We'll talk about that coming up as well. For now, though, yesterday was the day, and it happened during the show, the ESPN perfunctory hashtag long read with all the reasons why Bill Belichick didn't get a job in the 2024 hiring cycle. And, well, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say what I want because
it's
Pat McAfee show yesterday
took
plenty of shots at their colleagues for the Bill Belichick report. So, the biggest news in there, in my estimation, the first item we wrote, and I got a list of like five others I still want to get to from this very long article that has a lot of good stuff if you look closely for it. And if you can get through the paragraphs that don't really say anything, your payoff is you'll find a paragraph that says something. And that's kind of how long reads go. It's an art form that I don't think anybody really cares about, but they still create long form articles for whatever reason. I just want the information. And the top information in the article was that Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, when contacted by Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, to discuss Bill Belichick after an initial meeting where going into it, the thinking was Belichick and Blank are meeting together alone with no one else around. We know how this is going to end. We know where this is going. We know that somebody's getting the keys to the super yacht and it's going to be Bill Belichick. Well, Arthur Blank does his due diligence talking to Kraft, and Kraft, according to this multiple thousand word article published yesterday by ESPN, Kraft says he can't trust Bill Belichick. And I mean, that's a like stop the press big deal.
Huge.
In my mind.
It is. Yeah.
That is a tough thing to hang on a guy.
Yeah.
So you better. And I come at this from the perspective of someone who never had any journalistic training, but has learned through trial and error for 23 years. More error than trial. But over time, I have learned where the lines are and where you need to have that instinct that tells you you probably haven't nailed it down just yet. You probably need to work on it a little bit more. You probably need somebody who is in a better position to tell you that's what was said. And I say that because the sourcing for this claim that Kraft told Blank, you can't trust Belichick, or words to that effect, the trust word was key, and it was be careful trusting him or you can't trust him, whatever it is. It's an issue of trust, and Kraft says you can't have it in Belichick. A source who spoke to two other sources, and it was like second, third, fourth hand.
Yeah,
I've never seen anything like it before. I've never seen it articulated that way before, where it was that attenuated from the people who supposedly had the conversation. And I'm telling you, if we had done that, we would have been fed poisoned crab cakes by somebody.
Yeah.
You would have been
asking, where'd you get that? Hold on, who told you that? Wait, check, did you text me? I need to hear that. Right, right.
No, I mean.
You would have been nervous as hell.
I was blown away by it. Yeah. I was blown away by it.
Right.
It is one of the flimsy, for something that significant, it is the flimsiest sourcing I have ever seen. And I apologize in advance to Don Van Natta, Seth Wickersham, and Jeremy Fowler. They were the three names on the article. But hey, somebody's got the obligation to say, and maybe there was just too many cooks in this and too many editors, and maybe they wanted to get this thing posted before it's announced that Belichick's working for ESPN for the draft, because if we wait a day, it's really going to be awkward if we put this out there. We better get this out. We just made it. We just got it out there before the news was announced that Belichick's working for ESPN Plus and the Pat McAfee show for the draft. And I'm sure that had something to do with it, because it's a lot more glaring if you start shooting arrows at the guy you just hired. So let's shoot the arrows. Let's empty the quiver before we announce it. And, you know, we got this one last thing and we don't really have it as firm as we'd like. And well, but screw it. This is the day to do the article. Time's up. What do you got? Well, it's a source who has a source who has a source who has a source who has a source. Ah, that's it. We got to go. Let's go. Time's up. Type it up. Get it done. And again, if you want to be upset with me, that's fine. Don't post a story that has that flimsy of sourcing and you won't have anything to be upset about. You won't have somebody who comments on how flimsy it is, because it's flimsy. And I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying I'm not prepared to conclude it happened based on something that flimsy.
Right. Right. No, listen, it's rare. I would say that's the number one thing that jumped out to me when you read it. You were like, wait, this is a source from a source, right? I had to go back and read that, you know, once or twice the first time I saw it. And it's rare. I think it's perfectly legitimate to question that and for us to sit there and say that and go, yeah, we're not going to totally buy into this just because you three wrote this. And we've never seen it kind of done this way. You know, where it's this person told this person told this person. That's what we've heard. And yeah, these are pretty strong things to say. Now, saying that too, we know that these owners talk and they do talk to people, right? And that group of people does have some connections, right? So again, at this other side of the story, even though that's weird and flimsy, like you say, you know, I'm not so sure I'm ready to sit here and say, oh, I don't think there's truths to that, right? Because there's things that go on during this whole thing too in the article that, you know, I did know that were true, that weren't out there and whatever else. So I went, well, they knew that and I knew that too, right? So I had heard that and, you know, from somebody that was a real source kind of connected to the situation. So there are things that make you go, hey, wait, I had heard that and believed that from somebody I knew. But yeah, an accusation like that, that's pretty strong. And you usually see a little bit more of a hardline stance or whatever you want to say there about who they got that from.
Now, the rest of it, and I'm not going to go through all the various details. You can go read the whole article if you have the time and the inclination to do so.
Right.
But the rest of it tracks with what we had suspected.
Yeah.
That Arthur Blank wasn't prepared to deal with the turmoil that would have flowed from hiring Bill Belichick, even if you keep everybody else in place. And Belichick says, all I want to do is coach. Because as I said from the get-go, okay, you're talking about which receiver you're going to take in round four, or you're going to take an offensive lineman, you're going to take this guy, and Terry Fontenot, the GM of the team, has got final say, and Bill Belichick's rolling his eyes, harumphing, something. And, you know, his power in this is to just not use the guy. Hey, I signed this free agent. I didn't really like him. Well, I signed him. I'm the one who has final say over the roster. So he buries him on the depth chart. That was my first lesson in NFL dysfunction. GM signing guys and the coach refusing to use them. That's what you run into here. When you have a guy who's used to being fully and completely in charge, he says, I'll do whatever you want me to do to get the job. Then once he has the job, he starts acting a different way. That's human nature.
Sure.
Not an indictment of his character.
Yeah.
That's human nature.
Right.
He's going to revert to what he knows.
Right.
And he's going to swallow his opinions. You're drafting this guy. I wouldn't draft this guy. Well, I think this is the guy. Well, I wouldn't draft him. And he drafts him. It's like, well, now what am I going to do with this guy?
Yeah.
Well, I got to teach Terry Fontenot a lesson. I'm not going to use the guy. So maybe next time around, he'll draft the guy I want. want. That's the risk you take when you bring in the guy who ran a program for 20 years.
Yeah, no, that is the risk. That's what scares everybody, right? You know, that's why, you know, in the article, and we had heard, right, they list your top five candidates, right? And nobody in management wrote Bill Belichick because they weren't going to have the same job maybe if Bill Belichick was there. So, duh. Yeah, wait, let me write the number one candidate is the guy that might fire me or my job becomes less than. That's the guy I think we should hire, Mr. Owner, right? I mean, come on, we know that makes no sense. So that's a little odd in itself. Yeah, that was the risk. That's the risk. I think that's what scared people about Belichick in general. I do think Belichick has self-scouted thyself. He's smart enough to realize, and I do think that he is at a point where he just wants to coach football. Now, you know, does he stick his nose in and do that things? Yeah, that's the risk you run there with Belichick. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, I had heard from people in the process before any of this even came about that Bill was willing just to coach, right? That was fine with him. He's at a point in his life where, fine, we'll do that. And I think some of these organizations he was picking or talking to in a lot of ways or has his eye on, he believes they're pretty good at picking players anyways. But, you know, again, I understand Rich McKay, Terry Fontenot, whoever else in that front office being a little weary about hiring Bill Belichick and having him come in and, you know, ultimately being the king of the organization.
We've seen this movie so many times, though. A coach goes in and has some success and starts grabbing for power. That's what happened in New England. He didn't walk through the door in charge of everything. He walked through the door as the coach and only the coach. And then you win a couple of Super Bowls and you're in a position to expand your influence and take over.
Yeah. It is human nature. Disagree with the GM here and there and blah, blah, blah.
His nature.
Yeah. Right.
You can't ignore that. That's why it's so important to you know, this whole trust thing. Like, if you can't trust him and the thing you're hoping to trust him on, is he just willing to coach? And is he going to do this passive-aggressive or aggressive-aggressive thing where he tries to take over? And why would any owner want that turmoil? Especially for Arthur Blank, who's, you know, he's only got so many football seasons left,
as we all do. Right.
But once you get into your 80s, you don't know how long it's going to be, and you want to try to get a championship.
Well,
and I would have a fascination with hiring the guy who took the trophy away from me.
Of course.
I had it in my hand.
Of course, right.
And he came and took it away from me, and he's available for me to hire.
Right.
Why the hell wouldn't I hire him?
Exactly.
Why wouldn't I fire everybody I have to fire to put him in charge? See, Arthur Blank was trying to have it both ways. And if he just would have gone all in with, there's that word again, all in with Bill Belichick, you know, and I think he wanted to, but he didn't want to go through all the crap that he'd have to go through to do it.
Right. I don't disagree there. And you know, again, I'm sure he's heard good stories about Bill Belichick through Robert Kraft through the years, too. You know, let's get into that trust thing. That trust thing is that's a major blow, if true, if real, right? That really is, right? That'd be a low blow by Mr. Kraft and using that language to an Arthur Blank. And I don't know how I feel. Well, I know how I feel about it. I mean, first off, let's just unpack this a little bit. Nobody in football or anybody that's been around football for the last 10, 15, 20 years, everybody knows that Belichick and Kraft have not been on the same page and there's a little issue there and whatever. Anybody. It doesn't matter what it is, right? There's also a common knowledge of, yes, Mr. Kraft, you know, wants to stick his nose in there a little bit, even into football things. And, hey, like most coaches, right, Belichick, whoever it is, McVay, Shanahan, blah, 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 they don't always want to sit down and explain everything to the owner about every football decision and do that, right? That's part of it, too, as well. Let alone, I think, you know people in football. I know people in football. It's gotten out there that, you know, the Krafts sometimes feel like they deserve a little more credit for the New England Patriots dynasty and that Bill gets too much credit and that there's a little bit of bitterness there. I think those are pretty common thoughts around the league with no matter who you talk to, that some way they've heard from a source or they've heard directly or whatever that they feel that way. And so it's not the greatest relationship as far as the way it ended and where they're at now compared to 15 or 20 years ago, right? And I think there's that aspect. And, you know, I think what this paints is like, yeah, maybe it was a little more bitter than I even expected, or maybe Mr. Kraft is even a little bit more bitter than I really thought here in this situation. But that's a killer type of phrase to use for a head coach, where I'd go, man, Bill Belichick, I don't know where the trust thing would be. It's like the least leaks or anything ever out of any great team we've ever seen. He doesn't ever tell anybody anything. He barely talks to the media, right? So, you know, from that point of the word trust, he's all about football, and you can definitely trust him. But, you know, I don't know whether it's true or not. You know, Mr. Kraft obviously didn't feel that way, if true, that he said that to Mr. Blank.
Here's the quote that was provided by longtime Patriots spokesman Stacey James to ESPN for this story. Robert steadfastly denies saying anything negative to Arthur Blank about Bill Belichick after Robert and Bill mutually agreed to part ways. In fact, Robert advocated for Bill to get the job. It would not surprise me to learn that owners sometimes lament to those close to them when their teams are struggling, but Robert Kraft never questioned Bill's character or trust when talking with Arthur Blank. Trust is important to Robert. He wouldn't have employed Coach Belichick for the past 24 years if he ever questioned his trust. That's the official statement from the Patriots. And, you know, I look at it in a more pragmatic way.
Yeah.
Now, and see, this assumes that another questionable element of this report is accurate, because they claim that Belichick, number one, is due to make $25 million from the Patriots this year, and number two, there would have been an offset for anything he made from the Falcons. I'm not sure either of those is accurate as reported. But if there's any benefit financially to Robert Kraft for Bill Belichick to get another job, why would you stand in the way of him getting another job?
Yeah.
And the only reason to do it, it's that ultimate pettiness of, I don't want him to go be successful
exactly.
somewhere else. I already
right.
had to deal with Tom
Brady
being doing, successful.
Yeah.
I don't want him to be successful
right.
somewhere else.
Right.
Although I don't know why he would care, because based on what he's seen the past 5 years, why would he conclude that Bill Belichick's going to be successful somewhere else unless he truly is only the coach? See, that's the dichotomy here. There's a belief, and I think it's justified, that he's the best game day coach
yeah.
that the NFL has ever
right.
seen.
Right.
But he had completely lost his ability to properly draft, develop, acquire, and build a team.
Right.
So if you go to a place where there is a team and you add him to the mix, he's going to make it better.
Yeah.
Now, take it next level.
Yeah.
If I'm Kraft, I'd rather he go to Atlanta than Dallas. Because next year, I think he's going to Dallas as of right now. And there's a whole thing between Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft. And the last thing that Robert Kraft is going to want is to see Belichick thrive arm in arm with Jerry Jones. So I look at it that way and I say, hey, Arthur, please hire this guy. Please hire this guy. I'll say whatever I have to say to get you to hire this guy, because I don't want him. If we're getting into these deeper motivations, I think the deepest and most important is I don't want him working with Jerry Jones. So, yes, Arthur, hire him.
Yeah, I would think, really, I mean, any of the teams that, you know, right, one of the sources had said that, you know, Belichick on his radar, right? The Cowboys, Eagles, Giants. I wouldn't think the Patriots would want to see, the Kraft family would want to see him with any of those, really, and have success especially. Right, the Eagles being a team that beat New England in the Super Bowl. Hey, it's a Northeast power, just like the Giants. Right, it could, you know, it's infringing on their territory to a degree, right? And
yes.
and of course those teams like the Eagles are really talented, and you'd be like, oh, well, he just goes there and coaches. Watch out, right? Your point, you know, what you say about right the talent on the football team there in the last few years, and Belichick the GM and all that. Listen, that's always been a little part of the conversation with New England and Belichick. I mean, you could go back 10, 12 years ago, right? You can go back where you'd go, I'd talk to teams and they'd be like, you know, oh, I mean, nobody's scared of New England's talent, right? They knew they were good, but they weren't like, oh my gosh, they're so talented, we're in trouble. It was more like, we just got to deal with Belichick and his coaching, and then Brady's going to execute it, right? Right? Or I'd used to laugh at coaches because they the ones that didn't like Belichick or haters, right? They would, oh, it's all Brady. And then they would crap on the rest of the team. And then I go, yeah, but they're in the AFC Championship and you don't think the team's that good. Why do you think that is? Oh, I think it's the coach. I think that's what it is. So there's always been that question to a degree. right? And I do think, again, from people that I've heard, that Bill is willing to at least accept that here. Now, you know, to what degree, to your point earlier, I don't know. But as I said a few weeks ago, and as I hear from people still, right, Belichick's coaching on game day, especially on the defensive side of the ball, is pretty special. And Mike McDaniel told me, and I don't think he has any problem with me saying it, at the combine, right? I was talking about what defenses, man, they do some crazy stuff to you, blah, blah, blah. He said, you ever watch the New England film this year? And I was like, you know, I don't know if I ever watched that one on film. He goes, go back and watch that. He goes, Belichick might have had the greatest game plan I've ever faced, right? You know, the things he did in that game really gave me problems and made me think, right? So that, to me, from that guy, that wizard, that just tells you that he was like, wait, I'm a wizard and I can't figure out this wizard. And that speaks to what he can do on game day, to your point as well, Mike.
And so you got to take the good with the bad, yeah. And that's the problem. There was just enough, and I don't mean bad in a bad way. There's just enough to counter the greatness, to raise questions, and to keep a team from pulling the trigger now. And it was really just the Falcons of the teams that had vacancies. The Eagles, there's some suggestion in the report that the Eagles at least thought about it before they decided to stay with Nick Sirianni. Look, back to this whole coaching versus running the show thing. There are some pretty strong breadcrumbs in there about Washington. And I guarantee you, if they could have trusted, there's that word again, trusted, that Bill Belichick would have been happy to be the coach and accept the broader structure with all this stuff they're doing with Bob Myers and Dave Gardy having a game day role, which I don't know what it's going to be. And Adam Peters in charge of the team. If Belichick would have stayed in his lane, if they could have trusted that, he would have been in play. Magic Johnson was advocating for Belichick to be the coach. Magic Johnson, one of the strongest personalities in all of sports, was advocating in the building for Belichick to be the coach. But the concern was he's not going to stay within the structure that we're trying to build
here. Right, and people had concern about the commander structure, too, right? I mean, I think that's fair to say, too, right? I do think that's part of why Ben Johnson didn't end up there, Mike McDonald didn't end up there. I think a little bit, like you just said, you just explained nine cooks in the kitchen there. I think that some people were like, whoa, I don't know about that place either, just to give that side of the story. Sorry, Mike.
You know, Commanders fans get upset because I try to point out the things that I see because they want to get drunk on this idea of, oh, it's not Dan Snyder. Everything's going to be great now. We're going to go win championships. I feel like they got a lot of cooks in the kitchen so Josh Harris can kind of run the show. Like, you dilute the power with so many people that you're the guy that owns the equity. You're ultimately steering the ship because there's so many other captains looking around for guidance. And they're ultimately going to look to the ultimate captain, the guy who runs the show. So anyway, we'll get into that a little bit more later as well. So Washington was in play. Philadelphia was in play. Atlanta was in play, and nothing worked out. You mentioned the possibility next year. And that's the 2025 dance card. We had that draft recently where those were the top three picks. Cowboys, Eagles, Giants. Three teams in the NFC East potentially with vacancies and potentially clamoring for Belichick, and they may create vacancies they otherwise wouldn't have created to try to get Belichick. This is one of those that I think, as a practical matter, it's going to be done before anyone gets fired. It's going to be done behind the scenes. In complete violation of the spirit, if not the letter, of the Rooney Rule, this deal is going to be done because the Eagles, the Giants, the Cowboys, two of the three aren't going to just fire their coach for a roll of the dice. Now, I mean, I think McCarthy's done after this year, barring something highly unexpected. But I don't think the Giants or the Eagles are going to move on unless they're sure they're going to get Bill Belichick. I don't know. Man, now that I talk about it, scratch all that. I think the Eagles are the only ones that would hesitate to fire Sirianni unless they thought they could get Belichick. I think if the Giants are going to do it, they're going to do it. The Cowboys are going to do it, they're going to do it. But still, if you have any trepidation, if you have any uncertainty about whether or not to make the move, and it all hinges on whether or not you can get Belichick, you kind of want to know you're going to get Belichick before you do it.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you there. It's the type of figure and Belichick and all that, that, like, you know, when it comes to that type of stuff, right, I don't think there's going to be much left to chance it will be back channeled and we get it all figured out. And then we got to go through the charades of, hey, we interviewed this person, we interviewed that person, we interviewed this person. Oh, hey, we're hiring Bill Belichick, right? Right. But I don't think any of us are surprised to hear those three teams. I think they've always been, you know, or I don't want to say always been, but great respect by Belichick and on the radar, especially the New York Giants. I mean, we know that. But I even with all you say there, right, with all you say, and as much as I know the Maras and there's a love for Belichick and the Giants organization, we know that for sure, right? I still think a year out of football, we're talking, what, 72, 73 years old, right? Man, I still think there's teams that are going to look at it and think about the same things we're talking about right now. Is like, are we going to trust that he can give control to this, or is he just going to be too strong and overtake everything? I still think you're going to have a lot of those questions when it comes down to it next year. I think it's going to be entertained by a lot of people, but I still sit here and just go, I don't know if anybody will actually pull the trigger to ever hire Bill Belichick. I'm in the club that I sit here now and that I think we've seen Bill Belichick coach his last football game. I'm more of along those lines and that we'll hear a song and dance every now and then, but I don't think anything's ever going to happen as we move forward.
I think that it's going to be the Cowboys or the Giants or nobody. I think if the Eagles were going to do it, they would have done it this year.
Yeah.
I think Jeffrey Lurie will find a way to talk himself out of it again because he clearly talked himself out of it this time. The age factor can't be ignored. The idea that, well, he just wants 15 more wins to catch Don Shula and then we got to go hire another head coach. He's only going to stay a couple of years. I mean, who knows how much longer he can patrol the sidelines. That's why George Halas stopped coaching in the 60s. He couldn't get up and down the sidelines anymore to go run and yell at the officials. Then you're going to have, what are you going to have? You're going to have him coaching from the booth? That's not going to work. So you have to be physically able to stand for 3 hours. That's one of the things. Like, you did the training camp tour at one point. I went to Minnesota when they opened the new facility, and we're standing out there watching practice. It's like, damn, like, my back hurts.
Yeah.
Like, you got to get used to standing up all the time.
Yeah.
If you're a coach, you are standing up a lot. And walking around a lot. And as you get older, you're just not going to be able to do it. So those are all factors as well.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, I hear you. And those are all factors. There's no doubt. I think I'm a little bit more in line with one of the things you said there. And I think somebody said that in the article, right? There was a source that said it or whatever, that if it was going to happen, it'll be Dallas, right? And that's kind of where I believe what I would bet on too. If it's going to happen, my money's on the Dallas Cowboys because I think there's less of a blowing up of the structure of the organization like we've talked about here. There, it's like, hey, here's a king. There's the king. His name's Jerry Jones. We know that, right? And he's got his, you know, princes underneath him. And they've got everybody else in line anyways. They tell the rest of everybody that they are the organization. And now it can just be, hey, new king, come in here and we'll talk and we'll figure it out here with two kings and the princes. And we don't have to worry. We never worried about these underlings anyways. They were always under our thumb. We're the kings and the princes around here. That's where I feel like that one would work a little bit more than maybe the Giants in Philadelphia, where you'd have a little bit of like, oh, I don't know. It might change us around completely from where we want to go and how long is he going to be here, right? You know, and we're going to change things around. That's where I feel like it'll scare teams ultimately.
We do have a colleague who has direct experience working with and for Jerry Jones who doesn't believe it'll ever work.
Right.
So,
yes.
And I still owe him a cheeseburger. Because I thought it was happening this year. And look, I don't know. Is this just part of the Jerry Jones step right up and see the show? Because he's openly spoken about working with Bill Belichick already. While he has a coach who's entering the last year of his contract, you can't make this stuff up, folks. That's why the NFL, when they're not playing the games, is still fascinating. And the thing you were mentioning from the story, and this is another somewhat tenuous piece of reporting, a source who spoke with a longtime friend of Belichick said the friend wonders if the coach will have another opportunity. I don't think Belichick will ever be a head coach again in the National Football League unless it's for Jerry Jones. That's from the friend.
I kind of feel that way too, right?
To reporters.
Yeah, right.
And you scoffed when we did the draft of Belichick's destination next year, and one of my picks was no coaching anywhere. You gave me a hard time. You just said you don't think he's going to coach.
Well, it was Belichick's destinations next year. The fun of the draft was to pick a team. It wasn't to pick none. I mean, that wasn't within the spirit of the rules of that draft. So that's why I didn't like that. But I don't necessarily disagree with that thought overall. I don't. Again, it's Bill Belichick. It's a strong personality coming in the organization. He's older and up there in years. The last few years in New England didn't look great, right? He's got a reputation of being cranky, and most of the league doesn't really know him or like him because of, you know, in New England, they weren't, again, hey, we're going to be buddy-buddy with the other coaches before the game or anything that way, right? It was so standoffish, right? They've rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I mean, there's a lot of coaches that, you know, you could talk to the last few years that are be like, oh, New England, Belichick, oh my gosh, I'm so sick of them and the way they treat people and act and blah, 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 blah. I mean, there's a faction in the league that is like, it is seething out of them that they can't stand the Patriots and the way they were for years and years and years, and that there's an arrogance that they invented football and all of that, right? That's the phrase I get. Oh, they think they invented football over there. So those are obstacles that are real and that he will have to overcome to get a new job.
It happened initially with the media, and I think it happens within the broader football structure. The bill has come due from the way he has treated people all these years. And you can make excuses for him if you want, but he has not treated people well far more often than not. And this is part of the palate cleansing he has to do. Maybe this McAfee thing, we're going to talk about it later. Maybe this is part of his strategic effort to appeal to a certain demographic and get fans excited about the prospect of Bill Belichick being the head coach. He needs to do that. Because people have to warm up to him.
Yeah.
They have to see a side of him they haven't seen before, and then he can go back to being a curmudgeon when it's time to coach again, if he ever coaches again. One other point from the story that was posted yesterday by ESPN.com. He wanted to bring to Atlanta key assistants like Josh McDaniels, Joe Judge, Jack Easterby, and Matt Patricia. First of all, Jack Easterby's name shows up in one of these ESPN stories,
Triggered.
That means he was one of the sources. He's one of the sources. That it's a quid pro quo. He gives Seth Wickersham, Don Van Natta, Jeremy Fowler, whoever, information, and he gets a gratuitous mention to elevate his status at a time when he has none. He was never an assistant coach in New England. He was a guy who parlayed being a chaplain into doing something with, you know, making the players' families happy, and then he goes to Houston and tries to take over. I'd be stunned if he was going anywhere with Belichick at the next step, if there is one for Belichick. But for McDaniels, Judge, and Patricia, at one point, Blank asked Belichick why those guys failed elsewhere, and Belichick said they were better soldiers than generals, which is kind of a tough thing to hang on some of your top lieutenants. And my reaction to it is very simple. They didn't know how to be generals because he is not a good general. He's not a good leader of an organization. He's a great game day coach, and that carried him a long way. But when it comes to creating the culture, getting the guys on board, remember, Matt Patricia goes to Detroit. First thing he does is he takes on Darius Slay and pisses him off, and Slay wants out. Well, that's how Bill would do it. No sacred cows. Goes after Tom Brady. This is what I do. I go after the biggest, baddest guy in here to show I'm in charge. It doesn't work unless you win. If Matt Patricia had come out of the gates and gone, you know, 12-4, it would have been okay. If Josh McDaniels would have kept winning after he started 6-0, it would have been okay. It doesn't work if you don't win. If you don't win, they come after you quickly, which they all witnessed, Chris.
Yeah, they did. Well, and he changed over years, right? I mean, again, we'll watch early years press conferences. He's not the same person as he was later in the year. He's affable. He's laughing with the media. He's saying jokes, all of that, you know. He got older, became more of a curmudgeon, got sick of people prying into his business, and he became worse that way, certainly. I don't disagree. Now, I am going to disagree with you in that I think he's a great general. I think he's a great general. I don't think he's great at teaching others how to be a general, right? And I think it's a little bit why he's such a great general, though, too, right? He's not necessarily great at letting those guys in on all the things he's done and the decisions and why he did that. He ran that because he was like, wait, I'm the general. They only have to worry about that group of soldiers there. They don't need to worry about everything. I'm the general. And he was very much like that. And I think that's part of the reason a lot of those guys failed is they didn't really realize, right, what Bill was doing in totality and decisions and why he made this and why he did that. And Bill, to your point with Patricia and what he did in Detroit, was not that hard line early on in his career when he hadn't won games and won championships and all that. He was more of a player's guy. And he's more of a player's guy than he gets credit for in general anyways. But, yeah, where I think he, has failed in that sense is that, he didn't open his door and teach some of his guys the full capacity of what it is to be a head coach and what he does and everything there. And that's where he's not the best, right? And I think part of that is probably tactical competitiveness, and part of it's like, wait, to run this organization the best way, I need to be the general, and my soldiers need to worry about those soldiers over there and not worry about everything army, right?
Do your job.
So there's a little
there.
Do your job. Right, exactly.
That's it.
Right.
Do your job.
Right.
But look, so, I mean, my point is...
I know, your points are not
Judge
wrong. Right, yeah.
Or Patricia or McDaniels.
Yeah.
You see what he does, and you emulate that when it's your opportunity. And I think between the two of us, we're coming to a consensus here, as we often do. What Belichick failed to do was sit down with these guys before they took their next job and say, now, look, you see me act a certain way now, but I couldn't have gotten away with that when I got started.
Right.
You can't
right.
walk in the door.
Right.
Acting this way.
Right.
You can't. This is a product of being successful. You can wall yourself off. You can create this top-down hierarchy where you're firmly in charge. You can acquire more power
right.
with winning.
Yes.
And you can be a way that is more effective when it comes to keeping you successful, and you don't have to trust people and you don't take chances that way. But yeah, he didn't tell him that.
No.
Because he doesn't want to equip somebody to go out and beat him. That one game that he plays against his former assistant, if he loses it, that ends up being the game that may keep him out of the playoffs or keep him from having home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So that's part of being a good general. And this is always one of the struggles in the NFL. We've talked about this before with Shanahan. Like, how many of the secrets do you really share with that guy?
Yeah.
That
you
know
careful.
Is going to be
right.
a head coach in a right. big game against you at some point.
I saw Josh McDaniel.
How much do you reveal?
I saw Josh McDaniel do that, as far as when he was the offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots, right? He'd go in a room, the rest of the offensive staff, and he'd come out, and right? And, sometimes you'd hear assistant coaches like, I'd do this and I'd do that and we should do this in our offense. And then, they got jobs later on in life. And I'm like, well, you didn't do that. Like, you thought Josh was not that good and Josh is killing it still. And, you're not going to have that job that long. Right. But he would go in there because he wasn't going to let that rest of that staff right, figure out exactly how he was digging out film and figuring out the plan and all that. It is a very real thing in the NFL. It is. It's protecting your ground. It's protecting, hey, this is what makes me great. This is why I'm the guy I am. I don't want to just tell everybody, hey, you want to be great too like me? This is my trick, right? So there's that very competitive aspect of that in an organization where it's not necessarily good for everybody, right? But that's how it works because of the political, the competitiveness of the whole thing, anyways. And Mike, I told you yesterday, I had heard from, I worked in New England. I've known that crew up there for a long, long time, right? I had heard from people connected to those people that, I was led to believe that, hey, Belichick's got something cooking, like I told you yesterday, and he's getting the guys back together. The band's getting back together, and something's going to go on. Now, I didn't know it was Atlanta, but that's what I thought it was because, of course, that's what we kind of thought it would be all along. That was the rumors that were out there because people that were connected to those people were hearing that. And that was certainly a name I heard, but I didn't know for sure. But obviously something changed there. And that, again, does give this conversation between Blank and Belichick, no matter what the sources of the sources of the sources say, where I'll give them credit here, is it obviously was real. It's tangible. We know that. It went down a path far enough to where Arthur Blank was certainly thinking about it, and then something happened, whether that's Kraft call or whatever else. But, you know, it's interesting, and it was interesting that it was that close.
With or without the Kraft call, there was no way Arthur Blank was going to upset his organization
to get Belichick
in there and trust that Belichick was just going to gladly accept being the coach and work in a structure where Terry Fontenot is the general manager. And Rich McKay, even though he's been moved out of day-to-day operations with the Falcons, he's still there, and he's still the guy who's talking to Blank on a regular basis. So that's just part of the reality. One last point. I keep saying one last point, but this is the last one, then we're going to take a break. Another item in the story is that Robert Kraft wanted to make this move a year ago. Jonathan Kraft, his son, and the team president talked him out of it. And that was the year where it all went sideways with Matt Patricia, the de facto offensive coordinator, and everything that happened with Mac Jones. I mean, that it really is surprising in hindsight they didn't just end it then. And they probably wish they had ended it then. And I don't know why they waited. Maybe it was one more year to get Gerard Mayo ready. I don't know. But it would have been better for everyone probably if they just wouldn't have had last season.
Yeah.
They would have just ended it after 2022.
The problem was is they were, you know, even with all that crap and we talk about and really one of the, I'm going to say it, is the greatest coach in the history of sports. But that was still one of the dumbest decisions I've ever seen by any great coach doing that. And I you know, try to say that respectfully, even though that doesn't come out that way. Because I respect
He said it at the time. If anybody else was doing this, we would say, have they lost their
crazy.
Minds?
And even with all that and how crazy it was, they were there in the last game of the year, win in Buffalo, and you go to the playoffs, right? I mean, we can't forget that. I mean, they won that game. They go 9-8. They're going to be in the playoffs. And I think that's probably why Jonathan Kraft was probably give it one more shot, too. And it's crazy to think about that 2 years ago, where as bad as that offense was, they still almost got in the playoffs because Belichick, the defense was still good, and they figured out how to manage games to a point, to your point, where they still were competitive and beat some teams that they probably shouldn't have beat.
All right, let's go ahead and take a break. We actually heard from Belichick yesterday, his initial appearance on Pat McAfee's show. He's going to be involved with that program for the draft next week. Some interesting things, plenty of interesting things Belichick had to say. We'll do that next here on PFT Live.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.